The Art of F&I, Conversations from the Box, written and read by Lloyd W. Trushell, copyright 2020, all rights reserved. Warning, if you're reading this book with the expectation of a handbook, a technical guide, or maybe 10 actionable tips to raise your PVR, this may not be the book for you. Instead, this is a journey into the minds of our customers and the behaviors that are happening inside of our dealerships. It's less about learning closes and more about developing process. Instead of word tracks, we'll talk about critical thinking and true intent.
I write this not for the many, but for you. Each of us is enough of an audience for each other. Epicurus.
Introduction. There are many books on how to succeed in F&I. Experts are everywhere trying to give you advice on how to be successful. You see magazines, blogs, podcasts, and even TV shows telling you how to maximize your profits and overcome any objection. Yet, something is still missing. Customer satisfaction is incredibly low. People dislike the buying process. Nearly 6 out of every 10 customers skip buying a vehicle service contract from their selling dealer, while third-party competition is thriving on selling to the same customers. With the advent of DealerTrack and Route 1, coupled with the evolution of the desk submitting deals before F&I involvement even begins, people should be delighted with the overall transaction times. But they're not. Another problem that we face is that most F&I training today follows an old model of trying to simply overcome objections. The focus on objections made companies like Pat Ryan and Jim Moran a solution for dealers wanting to create their own F&I departments in the 1970s, and it worked. They created an industry, but the world keeps moving. Today, endlessly debating with customers by overcoming every objection is a problem. We must be, as Bruce Lee said, like water, and adapt to each customer individually. For instance, today, a menu presentation with every product bundled into the complete or the platinum column may be the best way to present your payment, or it may not be. Do you know what sales process is most effective in your store? Or are you doing what your trainer tells you works best? More importantly, can they bring data? Can they demonstrate effective results in your store? If not, why are they giving you advice? The truth is, different methods and different behaviors work differently in different cultures. In other words, one size does not fit all. Yet, we engage in a one-size-fits-all 300% rule environment that has many F&I managers telling the customer things like, these are mandatory disclosures to sell products, like it's mandatory, like it's enforced by law or something. Overall, this doesn't work very well, and your customers agree with me. I propose there is a better way. To be clear, my goal is not to help you sell more products and make more gross. It is about engaging in behaviors that organically create more product sales and more gross. Because your customer wants to be protected, everyone does. They just don't like the way the coverage is being offered. Lastly, the framework and many of the concepts inside this book are going to reappear because the ideas interweave with each other. You may wish to adopt some of the principles from this book into your everyday life. Each little piece will not only help you in the box, but it will also help you with every other relationship that you hope to find success in. The stories are about F&I, but the principles are about life. I sincerely hope you enjoy our time together. Be well. Lloyd Trushell, Seattle, Washington, May 2020. P.S. This material was written and compiled over a few days, but it encompasses the observations, experiences, and ponderings of nearly 30 years in the car business, mostly focused on F&I development. I welcome your feedback and hope for your dialogue, so please reach out. Thank you.
The moment there is a suspicion about a person's motives, everything he does becomes tainted. Gandhi.
Chapter 1. Behaviors. Saturday, 2:38 p.m. 3 deliveries so far, 2 working. Customer number 1 was borrowing 147% a book, and she said, "No, I think I'll pass on gap coverage because $14 is too much right now." But she had $100 worth of worthless, scratched-off lotto tickets in her trade. Customer number 2 said, "If it breaks, I'll just pay for it." But right now, he has zero money down and is trading a vehicle with zero maintenance records. Customer number 3 cut me off and said, "Nope, no reason given," then pushed the menu back at me. If you've spent any time in a dealership, you've met these same customers. Now, most of us have been in a class where at some point the trainer begins carrying on about the cost versus value equation and how, when value exceeds cost even by a penny, the customer always buys. But that's not true. And if it were true, what happens when the customer never allows you to get that far? What about the guy that was surfing on his phone the whole time that you were trying to tell him all cars eventually break down and you should buy the coverage, but he tuned you out? Did his deal get in your head a little bit? Maybe you missed a good deal while he was in your office. Were you thinking, "There goes my PVR, there goes my bonus"? What is your strategy for dealing with customers that are not engaged, that are not interested in listening to your presentations? Do you have one? Many finance managers operate in the mode of saying, "These are mandatory disclosures," or "It's my job." But really, does the customer care about your obligation to do sales presentations? No. Most don't care. And now you begin to feel the pressure to sell something. So you begin thinking about your PVR, your penetration, your profit, your pay plan, or maybe just keeping your job. But this thinking is focused in the wrong direction. The thinking is focused on you, not them, and they can feel it. So they begin making judgments about you and your motives. Some will decide that you're just doing your job. Others will decide that you're being pushy or even rude. They might ask, "Do I have to decide right now?" You'll say no, but then continue to explain why the best time is now, but it's often too late. You've already missed the sale. Communicating with the customer and making a sale is completely within reach, but we often miss the signals. In the beginning of the transaction, there wasn't a stoplight. I mean, it was yellow, but because we've been conditioned to hurry up, we pushed for the sale. In short, we sped up when we should have slowed down. This might be the easiest concept in the world to understand. Everybody gets it, but it's also incredibly hard to do anything about it. Basically, it's hard to focus on your customers in a meaningful way when you're always under the pressure to perform. You are always reminded about your PVR, your penetration, your profit by your peers, the sales management, your general manager, the warranty rep, etc. And even on the best month, you're going back to zero soon. Given this situation and those beliefs, we must wonder if it's possible to create quick and easy transactions and still even make a profit. Some observations. As of this writing, I am approaching 30 years in the automotive business. I began training F&I managers in 1995, and during that period of time, I've never found the perfect close. I've never found anyone that can inspire the customer to purchase products 100% of the time. That said, I am going to share with you what I have learned about the most successful finance managers that I personally worked with and learned from over the years. Their behaviors were not able to persuade 100% of their customers either, but they consistently had higher numbers than their peers. Just like a professional athlete, they didn't win every game throughout their career, but they still outperformed everyone else. They added value to everything they did by exuding professionalism. They created a culture of team with their coworkers. In some cases, they established harmony where it did not previously exist before. I remember working with a group of 14 F&I managers back in 2002. 2 of the 14 within the group employed these traits. They had the most consistent numbers in the group. They had the highest VSC penetration in the group, too. 60 to 65% on average, and arguably one of the hardest brands to sell VSCs in, Honda. These guys never fussed about anything. They just came to work and they solved problems. Their GM loved them. So did the rest of the dealership, even the accounting department. I remember training them on menu presentations and word tracks. In large part, they just pacified me. Yes, they were model students and they would role play on word tracks, but they didn't actually use word tracks. They didn't have to. Their behaviors leading up to the customer's decision solicited yes early in the transaction. They didn't need to practice overcoming objections because there weren't that many. If the customer said no, then no problem. Which seems counterintuitive, I'm sure, but many said yes early and often, and those that were on the fence would usually buy with just a little bit more data. Yes, data, not scare tactics or hard closes. Their approach was more like speaking with a good doctor or a good lawyer, sharing valuable information and opinions with the goal of allowing the patient or the client to make an informed, intelligent decision. No extra push was needed, just clear, intelligent communication. The push is something that we create within ourselves out of our need to chase our goals. This is great in many areas of life, but too much can cause challenges in the box. If your customer begins to feel the push, they will begin pushing too. And this is where we often lose them. This is where we hear customers say, "Nope. Can I think about it? Do I have to decide today?" Therefore, if we want to communicate with them, we must get our goals aligned before we interact with our customers. We must know what our agenda is. We must identify what it is that we are actually pushing for. Basically, are we trying to help the customer, or are we just trying to help ourselves? In Latin, they have a phrase, cui bono, which translates in English as who benefits. So be clear and ask yourself, cui bono, who benefits if the customer buys your product? If the customer feels like a victim because they don't understand something or they feel like you're trying to scare them, they'll pull away. If, instead, your conversation is about creating the best ownership experience, then some people that wouldn't normally listen to you will decide to tune in. Basically, our intent is super important here because people feel it. So, we have to get our intent right before we engage with them. If you're trying to do something to them, like sell them product X, it will feel pushy. But if your goal is for them to have a great experience, it will feel completely different. Creating this difference is what will separate you from being just another salesperson. Methodology. How do you take a product that has been in decline since the early 1990s and turn it around during a recession? Well, first, you collect data on your actual customers, and then you customize your behaviors around them. In 2009, Subaru tried this approach by marketing primarily to educators, healthcare workers, technology professionals, outdoorsy types, and single female heads of household. In their wisdom, no one else bought Subaru cars, so no one else really mattered. They hired Martina Navratilova, a lesbian, former tennis pro, as their spokesperson. As a result, some people threatened to boycott the brand, but Subaru didn't buckle under the pressure. Subaru knew the group boycotting them weren't really their demographic anyway. Additionally, Subaru's sales were going up while the rest of the car business was falling apart. Remember, this was in 2009. 1,550 franchise dealers went out of business that year, followed by another 760 in 2010. Yet Subaru managed to begin a climb that still hasn't stopped. Like Subaru, you must niche and focus narrowly until you have a process that communicates the perfect message. This became evident to me in 2009 while the car business was shifting from the recession. Like Subaru, I began to study consumer behavior habits and focus communication myself. I found connections in dealership behavior that directly affected PVR and penetration rates. I learned how we could modify our behavior to not only be more profitable, but also the path to enjoying our work a lot more. I spent a lot of time studying how the brain works, specifically trying to understand how people make decisions. In the process, I discovered a couple basic laws about F&I. F&I law number one, trust is the most valuable currency in the world. Trust is universal. Regardless of what country you're in or what language you speak, it is more valuable than money. Trust is quite simply a gateway. Your customer will decide whether or not you can be trusted before listening to your menu presentation or considering any data that supports them buying a product from you. In other words, no trust equals no sale. F&I law number two. It is dysfunctional not to want the most warranty available on anything. No matter what product you buy, you will want guarantees. Also, you will want the longest guarantee available. Now, you may not be willing to buy any more coverage, but you will always want the most coverage available, and the more, the better. Because basically, we all want guarantees. Naturally competitive people. Could the need to win play into a decision to skip the VSC or the gap? Is it possible that at least some of your customers will feel this way when you begin your presentation? Absolutely. Maybe those customers are part of the group that always tries to maximize or stretch every cent out of every transaction. The desire to do so isn't always as rational as cost versus value. Sometimes it's just an emotional response. Emotionally, some people feel the need to win in exchanges and transactions. Now, would it surprise you if I said that there is no such thing as a group that always does that? Would it surprise you if I told you that the truth is, independently, people respond to all purchases differently, and there's rarely a code of disciplined behavior that all people keep? As author Yuval Noah Harari explains in his book, Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow, we decide and then we justify our actions. Basically, we make gut decisions and then tell ourselves a story that justifies that decision. An example of this would be a customer that has decided that all salespeople are cheats and liars. This is only a gut decision, but it will be justified by that one time something happened. Often, the decision is not based on solid data. In the box, this can result in your customer declining your products before the presentation even begins. This is a tough place to start, yet it happens all the time. By understanding some basic consumer behaviors and maximizing your best behaviors, we can radically reduce the amount of resistance that we receive right from the beginning. If your customer lacks trust, need, or belief, they will never consider the cost versus value equation. On the other hand, if we establish trust, people will listen and communicate openly about their needs and beliefs. Then concerns like cost, payments, or anything else that needs to be addressed before they can agree to buy your products can occur. The cost versus value myth. For years, I've heard sales trainers say, when value exceeds cost, the customer will always buy. But it's not exactly true. Let's discuss what cost and value actually mean. Costs are relatively fixed, and we have some control over them. Inventory, advertising, reconditioning, compensation, interest rates, insurance products, etc. are all pretty similar across the car business. It's rare that one dealership has a unique advantage in these areas. Value, on the other hand, is about belief. It's an opinion. Value does not care about cost. Value is determined by how someone feels in the moment. Eventually, you're going to have to answer the customer's question when they ask, how much is the VSC? How much is the gap? And in that moment, the customer is going to begin to make judgments. They will begin making assumptions and associations based on your pricing and the way that you deliver that information. The value of your products are going to be determined by the customer's opinion. Value can be heavily influenced by data and time, but value is still perceived. As a result, value can sometimes just be an illusion. I mean, tonight, you can go outside and hold a penny up in front of the moon, and when you look at it, you'll see that Abraham Lincoln's head is almost as big as the moon. But of course, it's not. It's an illusion created by distance. If the penny were farther away than your arm's length, the illusion would disappear. Time influences value the same way. If we lengthen the amount of time before an F&I product is needed, its perceived value lessens. If we shorten the time, the perceived value increases. It's that simple. Test it. Imagine yourself at the airport rushing to catch a red-eye flight. You're super hungry, so you grab a peanut butter and jelly sandwich from the gift store. The cashier asks you for $6.49, and you think, that's kind of pricey for a PB&J sandwich. Heck, you could buy a loaf of bread, peanut butter, and jelly for almost the same cost at a grocery store. But with no time left to find other options, the value of the sandwich grows. You buy it now or risk being hungry for the next 6 hours. And suddenly, it's worth it.
People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Theodore Roosevelt.
The Impossible F Customer. In 1995, I learned about the F Customer in an F&I class that I attended. And they are still a challenge today. I was taught that approximately 10% of customers are laydowns, 80% must be closed, and the other 10% remaining, well, they were F customers. I commonly heard statements like, these customers do not budge. They never buy anything from us. They are impossible. We've all heard the phrase, misery loves company. And some people, well, they just want to fight when they come to buy their cars. When we've had enough of anything, we may feel the desire to fight back, which kind of makes sense whenever it's directed at the right target. But sometimes the desire to fight becomes the desire to fight about everything or with anyone. This can happen when the confrontation is not in our own best interest, like skipping the vehicle service contract or gap coverage when it's needed. I think this is some of what drives F customers, a deep frustration with something that may or may not be related to your transaction. Regardless, if somebody's feeling defensive, they're more likely to tune out or just say no to your presentation. I believe the F in F customer should actually stand for fear. They could easily be afraid of you or salespeople in general. They could be uncomfortable because they bought elsewhere in the past and it wasn't a pleasant experience, or they left feeling ripped off by someone that was being really nice at the time. Of course, they could just be in fear of a higher payment when they should really be afraid of a major repair. So, they make the choice, fight or flight. Flight is easy to recognize. They'll say something like, can I think about it, or do I have to decide today? Often, stalling the decision isn't about considering their options, it's just a verbal form of running away. Fighting looks different. It looks like, nah, I never buy any of that stuff, don't waste your time. They push the menu back at you, stuff like that. I sometimes hear F&I managers explaining to me how dumb their customers are for skipping the VSC or GAP. This could be true, but it's more likely that a good portion of those dumb customers are actually in fight mode, and the finance manager is misinterpreting their actions. In our landmark book, Ego and the Mechanisms of Self-Defense, Anne Freud coins the phrase psychological self-defense. She explains that our minds will play tricks on itself or even lie to itself if needed for self-preservation. A common example is denial, but then she unpacks 47 more examples of emotions that people adopt to protect themselves. When the mind cannot deal with something, it will often rearrange or edit the truth, at least until it's safe to deal with the situation. Similar behaviors happen in the box. We've all had a customer that's $5,000 upside down refusing GAP. Why? Again, it's fear, and they reflexively say no. Their fear of being taken advantage of is greater than their fear of skipping GAP coverage. Now, getting through this is not impossible, but it will take courage and patience on your part. There are only two rules to communicating with F customers. Rule number one, you must share some undeniable information with your customer in a very gentle way. Now, what kind of undeniable information, you ask? Well, first of all, the undeniable fact that they actually want to be covered. They want safety. They want to be protected or otherwise removed from risk. In short, the customer actually wants the vehicle service contract coverage. They actually want the benefit that GAP gives. Rule number two, you need to demonstrate that you actually care about them and their outcome. Going back to F&I law number two, it's dysfunctional not to want the most warranty available on anything. No matter what product you buy, you will always want a guarantee. You will always want the longest guarantee also. Now, you may not be willing to buy more coverage, but that doesn't mean that you don't want it. And your customer wants it too. They want the most coverage available, the more, the better. So what's wrong with reminding the customer that we all want guarantees? And that they should at least review the product and then make an informed decision? Nothing, as long as you're obeying rule number two, being genuinely concerned about your customer's future. This allows you to authentically discuss the value of the VSC gap or other products without triggering their fight or flight response. Test it. If possible, give an example of a time that you volunteered or forfeited your warranty coverage on anything. You probably can't think of one, because it would be dysfunctional or irrational to decline a product guarantee. In short, we know that people want guarantees. We know that more warranty is desired as opposed to less. Now, people may not want to pay for it, but they do want the guaranteed feeling. We all do. On every product we buy every time. Not wanting the longest guarantee on any product would be dysfunctional. It would be irresponsible, right? Bad F&I training. Most of today's F&I training was designed in the 1980s and 1990s. Boom years, robust financial growth, and times were good. But today things are very different. The culture of America is a lot different than it was in the 1990s. Times have changed. Accordingly, the F&I training from the 80s and 90s has become ineffective and obsolete in many ways. Getting five no's from your customer is a problem. In fact, trying to overcome objections is a problem. We need to behave in a manner that does not create objections in the first place. Almost every time someone outside the auto industry asks me what I do, I receive a response that includes a horror story about buying or not buying a car. Experiences like an acquaintance who bought a Mazda and her story about three different managers taking TOs on her to try and close her on a vehicle service contract. They failed, but their customer is still telling people of how she loves the car, but not the dealership, and that she'll never buy from them again. Because of bad F&I training, F&I departments are on the chopping block in some stores. I see examples all over YouTube demonstrating old-school training methods. One video, a Lexus Aminta F&I presentation, has nearly 18,000 views. I watched this video, and it's exactly the same type of training that I received in the early 1990s. She graduated in 2016 from F&I school and was out of the car business a couple months later. I believe this is what is wrong with many F&I departments. It's unrealistic. No one's going to sit through 20 minutes of blah, 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 buy it or bad things are going to happen. And if they do sit through it, it's because they really want the car. But they are just waiting to say no again. We live in a world of 60-second transactions, and this antiquated sales method is dead. In the process of dying, it's also killing our CSI and our profits. I believe it's time for every dealer to abandon the model and embrace the inevitable change. I'm going to emphasize that there are some amazing trainers out there that grab your attention and they get results. I'm not talking about those guys. I'm talking about the trainer that's only reading word tracks out of a book and role-playing scenarios that don't model real-life transactions. Word tracks won't save you. Customers give us objections all the time, and we are trained to say the same responses when we hear those objections. This is the nature of word tracks. It's basically just a pattern of conversation that the customer, although unaware, is supposed to follow. Entertain for a moment that you're trying to explain why somebody needs gap insurance. Mr. Customer, blah, 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 blah. We do it so many times that we develop a pattern. Let's say that you want to describe a problem. You're going to have a very specific pattern of unpacking that idea for the customer. Similar to a martial artist using a physical pattern to slip or block an attack from their opponent, we use a verbal pattern to describe how someone can benefit from gap coverage. Understanding that we're using a pattern, the question then becomes, can we measure or modify the effectiveness of our communication patterns? If we're able to broaden the verbal patterns that we operate within, then we can communicate more effectively with other people. Learning more patterns allows you to be more effective in the conversation. It's like having two or three word tracks for a gap instead of one. You could deploy the word track that you hope will be most effective. These verbal patterns can be effective until you meet someone that recognizes the pattern for what it is, a manipulation. Once they see through it, you're in trouble. Now, a black belt in martial arts is someone that can see and run a lot of different patterns. They're not stuck with two or three. They understand the mechanics, and they're able to adapt in the moment. So a black belt in F&I doesn't need to follow a script. They possess the ability to go anywhere in the conversation with their customer. They are able to openly discuss products and benefits without fear of where the conversation goes. This comes from having two very important characteristics. First is developing a deep understanding of how your products work, how claims are handled, how the product helps create the best ownership experience for your customer. In short, professional competency. The second is having good intent. If our intent is about doing something to the customer rather than doing something for the customer, then we cannot fully be open in our conversations. This comes from hiding the truth or facts from people. If our intentions have a spirit of nobility, then we can open up more fully with the person across from us. We can communicate better and shorten the transaction time. In short, the second component is just having good character. Our goal from the very first moment with our customer is to make sure that they understand who we are. In order to do that, we have to ask ourselves, who am I? Do I always operate with integrity and honesty? That's number one. Number two, do I know how to perform my job at the highest professional level? Because if I'm only there for the money, it's likely I'm not going to put in the work to create the best ownership experience for my customer. Once they discover you're only there for yourself, the transaction, it's going to slow down. The profit is going to shrink while you try to negotiate through their reluctance. This is where word tracks fall apart. Like Bruce Lee said, real combat is spontaneous, not rehearsed. Meet the sales prevention manager. I can't count how many times I've heard people say, I keep pushing until I get five no's. Or sometimes it's, I don't hear the word no. They brag about hammering people and ripping heads off when they close a big deal, as if the customer didn't see any value in the products offered and it was only their amazing ability as a closer. Just pounding people with word tracks is a lack of intelligent focus on the overall F&I process. Too often, the only emphasis is on immediate profit, and zero thought is given to the future relationship between the customer and the dealership. For some F&I managers, they'll just find another job if they stop making money and their chargebacks become too high. New F&I managers have a different problem. They receive questionable to sometimes terrible training. Often, the new F&I manager finds themselves in the box without the ability to have a real-world conversation about the transaction or the products themselves. He or she is only focused on one thing: overcoming objections, which ironically creates more objections. But in fairness to everyone I've just mentioned, if they're not making enough profit, they're going to get fired, so they feel like they really don't have any choice. As a result, thousands of times a day, this type of transaction occurs in dealerships all across the country. Customer says no. The first F&I attempt is the transition. It's hard to justify the cost if you can't see the value. May I ask you a couple questions? Just trying to get permission to stay in the game. The second attempt. You told me. What they're doing is they're using the interview against the customer. Third attempt, scare tactic. Imagine that something happens. How are you going to pay the bill? The fourth attempt, the surprise. What if I can include all the benefits of the package and keep your payment the same by stretching your loan out for another year? The fifth attempt, the discount. Loss of profit and credibility. This is not a solution. In fact, these techniques are what people are actually complaining about the most. Many F&I providers know that it's happening, and they overlook it because they don't actually have a quality training solution. Yes, they have many years of experience, but their experience and training is equally as old. Unfortunately, no one talks about it, and many dealers and general managers are completely unaware.
Intelligence is the ability to adapt to change. Stephen Hawking.
Low commitment to training? In a recent poll of F&I managers, 61% felt that their trainer was, quote, completely out of touch and hadn't spun a deal in years, if ever. Another 23% received zero F&I training at all. In short, 84% of those surveyed felt like they were not getting the training support that they needed. Why does this happen? Well, most dealers and GMs are simply too busy to assist. They are so focused on advertising, hitting units, managing cost, keeping or finding employees, that F&I development is something that they plan on doing later. So they look for a plug-and-play person that can be up and running quickly. The obvious problem is that the person that they found is usually unemployed already, sometimes for good reason. Of course, this should raise questions like, what happened at the last store that caused them to be unemployed in the first place? This perpetual rotation of finding a Band-Aid for F&I may work a little bit longer, but the F&I process is often the deciding factor on whether many customers even return to the dealership. So dealers should take note. As of 2019, the average new car dealer is spending $640 per unit on advertising, but less than $10 a unit on F&I training. They often expect the insurance company or their local agent to provide training, but sometimes what they get isn't in alignment with their goals. Instead, it's just another Band-Aid. Modern dealerships are searching for a solution to shrinking profits, unfavorable reviews, and are desperately in need of providing quicker transaction times once the customer agrees to buy. They recognize the need for better process, and they understand the hard economic consequences of what happens when they fail to deliver a quality experience to their customers. This is just another reminder that endlessly attempting word tracks, hoping to overcome objections, does not create lifetime customers. If we are truly building a legacy, we must learn to adopt the behaviors that help customers engage in the process of selecting products with us. High-level problem solving. Life is just a series of events. Many of these events are problems, but sometimes we can pick our problems. A small problem like finding an extra $30 over the next 30 days is pretty manageable for most people. A bigger problem like having to pay thousands of dollars to fix your car or pay off a loan this afternoon are much less manageable. The truth is, the solution to one problem is typically the beginning of the next. Like a customer that skips the VSC and then acquires $2,200 in credit card debt at 18% just to pay for a repair that they were overcharged by $400 on. This is a pretty bad day for them, and it could have been easily handled for $30 a month, but they didn't pick the $30 a month problem. Occasionally, we can pick our problems. In fact, I would argue that that is our job, to help our customers pick better problems. An extra $50 a month might be a strain on the budget for some of your customers, but major repairs, gaps in insurance settlements, and excessive depreciation from loss of appearance are much worse. Just like in life, we have choices. I can pick the problem of eating healthy, less tasty foods today, or experience the problem of poor health tomorrow. I can pick the problem of finding time to exercise today, or have the problem of my body failing tomorrow. I can pick the problem of reading books to stimulate and educate my mind today, or I can suffer the lack of knowledge and understanding tomorrow. For our customers, they can pick the problem of $35 a month now for a VSC, or have the $1,800 emergency later when they must repair the most important tool that they own. They can pick the problem of $14 a month for Gap, or risk having to pay $3,000 to pay off their car before they can replace it. The goal here is to solve your customers' problems before they even occur. Being good at problem solving leads directly to success, not just in the box, but in most endeavors throughout all of our lives. Test it. Take a professional fighter, for instance. He or she has a game plan when the fight begins, but if the other fighter is getting the best of them, then they have to adapt or else they're going to lose. This is problem solving on a very high level. They either make adjustments and solve problems or they lose, period. The paradox is that the stress goes up fast when it's tied directly to your paycheck. The same thing happens in the box. You've got seconds to figure out how to solve problems, or your paycheck is going to be affected. And just like a fighter, we must train. In our case, training is learning how our products help protect customers. Once you've mastered that, you could go anywhere in the conversation that the customer takes you. You can make the necessary adjustments and help them choose from the protection packages that solve their problems. Confessions of an F&I Trainer. I couldn't do it anymore. The lie. The status quo. Like a teacher telling the happy story of Christopher Columbus to elementary kids while knowing the truth is very different. There I was sitting in the training room with the new F&I manager. We were about to go through the motions again. Presentation, handle objections, print. That is it. That is all he needs to know right now. The idea is simple. Make someone new to the F&I department profitable for the store immediately. At least this guy had a foundation as a BDC guy in a prior dealership, and he knew his way around the DMS. He and I had already completed one day working on the basics and laws. On day two, we were 3 hours into the menu presentation session. We broke for lunch to grab some tacos in the break room, and then it began. A conversation. Philosophy, economics, and purpose with the newbie F&I guy. As we go, I recognize he's wicked smart, and he has some pretty great observations on life as well. I learned a bit. Later on in class, we're role-playing word tracks. You know, all the all cars break, overall cost of one repair, 99.9% style stuff. He looks me dead in the eye and seriously asks, "Does any of this shit actually work on people?" My ego speaks. "Absolutely," I announce without hesitation. We continue training. I can feel mild cynicism, but we carry on. His mind opens a little bit to the training. We spend 3 more days practicing presentations and overcoming objections. I leave, and soon his numbers are in the top percentage of my group. Success, right? Not really. I was still bothered by the question weeks later. I told my wife about this, and she told me something profound. Something my ego couldn't handle. I wasn't practicing what I preach, and I didn't even know I was doing it. She told me, "You didn't use word tracks with your customers, and most of your transactions were just conversations with people." I'm floored. I can't believe it. But then it occurred to me, the difference between a close and an explanation can be subtle. I had ways of unpacking information and explaining things that didn't end with, "Would you like your payment to begin in 30 or 45 days? I didn't overcome objections. I just helped people understand their decisions better. I was communicating gently, and people were moving forward with me, but I was teaching something entirely different. Today, I clearly understand that it wasn't my closes that generated higher profits. It was my care.